Paddington is my one and two are some of my go-to like comfort movies.
You know, it's so funny. I've not seen number two. I was so shocked by how delightful number one was. I was really not anticipating it to be such a good film. It's so good.
It's so good.
And like even my boyfriend, who can be a bit of a film snob, and like when I go to watch kids' films for comfort, he's like, you know, we'll roll his eyes sometimes. You know, he'll be a bit like, come on, you know. And he was like, that is maybe one of the best films I've seen this year when we watched it. I was like, right?
It's I think it is like undeniably good.
It is undeniably good. I really need to watch the second one. I'm so glad that you've reminded me to do this. I really will.
A lot of people think the second one is better than the first.
Really?
Which, can you imagine? But it's they're both so good.
Okay.
I'm a big Muppet person.
Uh-huh.
And I think the humor of Paddington is very like original Muppet movie, which I just love.
That's really accurate.
Right?
Yeah, I'm also a big Muppet person. Yeah. I feel like I didn't realize that the Muppets Christmas Carol wasn't the OG Christmas Carol until I was studying like Victorian English literature when I was like 16.
They ripped this off from the Muppets?
Yeah, and then I was like, oh, the book came first. Huh.
Well, you know, the book came first, but the Muppets perfected it.
The Muppets immortalized the work of, is it Dickens?
Yeah, it's Dickens.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the work of the Muppets. We all know that.
For sure. And it's funny because Paddington, you wouldn't maybe think of Paddington as a fantastical creature, but he's a talking, clothes-wearing, sandwich-loving bear. So.
He loves his marmalade.
He does.
Is from Darkest Peru, in case someone forgot.
Amazing.
If you haven't seen Paddington, you have to. It is truly... I mean this in the good way. I like cry the entire time I watch that movie because it's just so nice. Like everything just gets me. And I get like, there's a part where he puts on his little coat, which it's iconic. It's got the little wooden... buttons.
Yeah, his little duffel raincoat.
Yes. And he puts it on and like I started to cry like my own son got his first, like it was like his first day of school picture. I was like, he looks really good.
Such a handsome boy.
I'm so proud of him.
That's so funny. I also just, I feel like I have a tense relationship with being a British person. I think I think that's the correct way to feel about being a British person.
Yeah.
Paddington makes me patriotic in a way nothing makes me patriotic. Truly, I am not a patriotic, God save the Queen, flying the Union Jack person at all. But Paddington makes me want to put my hand over my chest and sing the national anthem like that. And like, it takes a lot for me to get to that place and Paddington does it. So, I'm really glad that we've started this episode with an acknowledgement of a true national treasure.
It really is. Yeah, he should be. He should be also like, there's the dog mayor in Idlewild here. And like, I do feel like Paddington could run for office and I would be like, yes, absolutely. And they'd be like, that's a cartoon bear. And I'd be like, but he's going to do a great job.
I would have more faith in Paddington in number 10 than the last all of our leaders.
Yes.
Every single one, maybe.
He's just going to look at the issues and be like, well, this seems like the kindest choice.
Right. And do you know what? That's all I want is a leader that makes the kindest choice.
Yes. And he always has a sandwich in his hat.
Oh, which is just good. Which is good forward thinking. Like,
yes.
You know that what I mean? That's good preparation.
He's
that's planning,
good planning ahead. He's... Yes. And sure, he does. He gets into trouble sometimes. He gets in over his head and he makes a big mess. But he's always there to help you clean it up.
Yeah, absolutely. Which, again, more can be said for most of our leaders. we might get accused of being too political now, Alexis.
Oh, you're right. I've done it again. I've done
too political, suggesting that Paddington should run for office. I'm going to do a good job.
I couldn't get into that show. They were just on and on about Paddington being the next great leader. Speaking of fantasy creatures.
Yes.
We have Marcel and Hannah again the rest of our conversation this week. And we it goes, I'm gonna say it goes hard.
It goes hard. It slaps. We go hard for the fantasy creatures this episode. Yes. It was inevitable because Hannah and Marcel are the amazing hosts of Witch Please. So mm-hmm. we knew that a big part of our chat with them would have to concentrate quite heavily on not only the fantastical creatures of Harry Potter, but just the notion of fantastical creatures in general.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't expect it to slap as hard as it did. I was wheezing at some point.
So funny.
Like
right off the bat. We also, spoiler alert, we also talk about dinosaurs, which I know you're going to say that's not a fantasy creature. We get into it.
You can so tell that none of us did science degrees, science majors, like none of us. It's like spot the arts kids.
Yes, there they are. Because also the way that we all talk about fantasy is so, it is our form of like academia.
100%.
But then every once in a while you're like, yeah, good that you know about all of this made up stuff. But like, yeah. None of you have taken a science class. Like, clearly.
Wonderful. That is so true. It is great. It is wonderful.
Do you have any quick pet updates?
Been going on lately? So we've had a lot of pet babysitting the last few weeks, which has been like hilarious to witness. I'm gonna have to post the picture because it's honestly so funny. So normally when you know, like my parents go away, I look after Simba. I tend to not have Simba and Persephone together because I think Persephone would beat up Simba, truly. But I'll do like a journey between, or I'll stay at my parents and my partner will look after Persephone. But it just so happened that this one week, both me and my parents were away. And so Persephone was looked after by her aunt Anya, who's one of my best friends. And the only reason I trust Anya to look after her is because she matches Persephone's instinct to be violent and hateful. And so where Persephone will kind of, you know, pounce at someone and they might flinch away, Anya, she's from West Belfast, which if you're familiar with Ireland, will be all you need to know. Sure. So Persephone will launch her and Anya will be like, what are you going to do? What are you going to do to me? Just like prop, just will really, and Persephone doesn't know what to do. She's like, oh my God, I've met my match. And then they coexist like quite peacefully.
That's adorable.
So it's great watching someone out alpha, my very alpha cat.
Yeah.
Which is just really hilarious. And then Simba was looked after by my cousin Lara, and she sent us the most, and Simba, like, he loves everybody. He's the sweetest boy. You know, he was giving her cuddles, but just occasionally he would look at her with like genuine suspicion. And I will post the photo because it is, you'll see what I mean. He's looking at her like, I know this is okay. I'm just not quite sure why I'm here. Like, what? So I'm going to post some suspicious pet pictures because Persephone actually there's a similarly funny picture of Persephone like, at night, sitting on the end of our bed, looking at Anya like, you're not my mum and dad. I've been very amused by the fact that you can't explain to your pets that, you know, these people that you know and you love are going to be here for a while and we're coming back and that's okay. And so they just don't quite know what to make of it. Like, they know they're not in danger, but they're still like, I don't recall signing a consent form.
Right.
It's been hilarious.
That's so funny. I love that.
What about yours? What about the quads? What's going on with the quads, Alexis?
You know, one thing that has been strange, I think because it's hot, it's summer, but lately, so normally Crumb and Cricket sleep in the bed with me and Grant. So it's a packed bed. And the cats sleep downstairs. They do their own little thing. But I think because it's been hot, Crumb keeps like jumping off the bed and sleeping on the ground. And the amount of stress it brings me is honestly embarrassing.
Aww.
I'm always like, what are you doing? Like, Are you okay? Like, are you sick? Like, and it's like, he's clearly fine. He's just sleeping down there where it's less hot. There's not, you know, a bunch of body heat. And he's, you know, he's a thick boy. I feel like he might heat up a little bit faster.
Yeah.
But every night I'm still like, are you sure you're okay down there? Like, you're fine? And yes, he is fine. He's just,
oh my God, bless him.
He's just getting a little independent too. It's just so, because, you know, he's been, I've had him since he was 6 weeks old. So I just keep being like, but you sleep up here. Don't, right?
And he's just like, Mom, I'm okay. Like, it's all good. You gotta let go.
Yes, I am still 3 feet away from you. Like, it's fine. And like Cricket, one of Cricket's funniest traits to me is that he's the most snuggly dog. Like, we call him a little weasel because he also will just like burrow his way into your neck as much as possible. But the one time that he's ever like grumpy with us, like he'll get a little bit, he'll growl and he has like snapped at us, is if we try and move him while he's sleeping. And it's so rude because he will be like, you know, like next to our neck and whatever. And we're like, all right, bud, this is the most uncomfortable place you've ever been. Like, we're just going to move you. And he's immediately like, this is my bed, dude. I let you up here. Like, this isn't yours to you. Crumbs on the ground. Like, what are you?
And that's so funny because he clearly is just like, I think you've misunderstood the situation. Did you think you were in charge of this? No.
Because also, like, what is it that you're just very comfortable? Like, I've never moved him off entirely of the bed. It's like, I just need you to go literally anywhere but where you are. And
yeah,
he hates it.
Nah.
He hates it.
Nah.
So that's. Yeah. That's what's going
on. I love that so much. That's so funny. Just the, and you know what? Like, in a way, I kind of understand, because being moved when you found the perfect position for your limbs and you're like, oh, I'm so comfy. Oh, this is perfect. And then someone is like, nah, that's not working for me. Even if the request is perfectly reasonable, I do understand the irrational rage. Like, I do get it.
Yeah. I wonder what his zodiac sign is, you know?
Oh my God, I would love to.
I wish I could.
That's definitely, that's got to be something that we do in the future, is a deep dive on our pet zodiac and what it means, because Persephone is an Aquarius and she is such an Aquarius.
I mean, me too. I get it. So
yeah. So like, that would be a really be very funny chat for us to have. Should we get to the interview?
Yeah, we got to get back into it. Yeah. Well, speaking honestly, what a good segue, because it would be silly to bring you both here and not talk about like fantasy creatures. Also.
Oh yes.
So I guess, like, do you overall, do you have any favorites? When I say that, does anything come to mind?
Oh,
sorry.
Boy.
Can I?
Yeah.
Yes, Hannah. Are you sorry. Okay?
I was about to say dinosaurs.
A lot of people don't know this about Hannah, but she's actually like that one particular type of creationist.
I'm a new earth creationist. I think dinosaurs are made up.
You know, like unicorns and dragons and dinosaurs.
I know.
Oh my God, spot the humanity, Steven.
Ellen and I have been watching that, oh gosh, what's it called? Prehistoric
Planet on Apple TV. It's
like, I know that they were real, but there is like an element to it that you're like, whatever though. Like, I think it kind of counts in the same category.
Me and Alexis, like our WhatsApp chat we're watching it is like, and they're telling us that dragons aren't real, but this is real. Yeah. Like, are you, like, come on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the way, I don't know, the way that they move.
Yeah, you're doing arm gestures, none of which look anything like anything I've seen a dinosaur do.
That's how I felt watching
this
show.
Have you seen dinosaurs do things, Hannah?
It looks... Yes.
In the documentary Jurassic Park, I watched several dinosaurs.
I know dinosaurs are real, though, as you point out, much of what we think we know about dinosaurs is largely speculative.
Mm. Yeah, it's
like,
projection.
We're pretty sure this dinosaur was like this, but we have like one toe bone.
Yes.
So we're sort of extrapolating from the one toe bone.
Ergo.
So. But this is the thing. It's like, yeah, like this, like, I'm like, but then how do we know that mythical creatures aren't real, guys? Like, you've got this one wing bone from this one kind of dinosaur, and you've created this whole creature.
The way to explain why I was moving my arms weird, there is this like, pterodactyl-looking dinosaur.
I know exactly what bird, like, you were doing, Alexis.
It walks, it pulls in its wings and just walks on its elbows, basically.
Yeah, like this.
Yes. And it is the most horrifying thing I've ever seen.
No wonder it's extinct.
Have y'all seen the new Jurassic World Dominion?
No, not yet.
Okay, I'm a Jurassic Park devotee. Like, I have a Velociraptor claw on my desk right now.
You have to watch this show, then.
Oh, I will.
Hannah.
Yeah,
you
should.
Look
at this.
Insane.
Look at this.
What is that?
It's a reproduction of the Velociraptor claw that Dr. Alan Grant has in the original Jurassic Park.
That rules. From our perspective, you brought out sort of a hook.
I can't believe that you all don't immediately recognize this iconic Velociraptor claw. He uses it to threaten and terrify a child at the beginning of the movie.
Oh, yeah, he does.
Very important. Anyway, love, in Jurassic World Dominion, there's a bunch of new dinosaurs, like, not new to the franchise.
Like, new Pokemon come out.
Exactly. Including one called Dreadnoughtus.
Okay.
What? Yeah, like a dreadnought.
That sounds like
Dreadnoughtus.
Yeah, that sounds offensive.
Yeah,
also.
New dinosaur just dropped. But there's one that has these, like, wild three-pronged sloth claws.
Like,
just, and they're super long.
No,
and
this
just
is made up. Like, it's not real.
Anyway, all of this is to say, dragons. I feel very frequently.
I'm trying to get it together.
Okay, sorry. So sorry, out of here, Marcel.
I'm here.
Like, as a child, any fantasy novel where the premise was people can in some way spiritually bond with dragons.
Mm-hmm.
So important to me. Like, Anne McCaffrey's Dragon Riders of Return. Absolutely foundational.
Did you read Aragorn?
No, I'm too old. Aragorn came out too, like, it came out
too old.
Yeah, I guess it's like why I want to make a podcast about Harry Potter, so maybe I should. Maybe I should calm right down.
I was too mature. Anyway,
I'm
doing my podcast.
It follows Harry Potter, a young boy dragon books. No, I have not read them. Maybe I should. I did.
No, they're so
there's
good.
An absolutely.
But it's that thing where, like, the spiritual bond of dragons. I love that.
Yes, there's so a good. Wonderful, super gay fantasy novel that came out a few years ago called The Priory of the Orange Tree.
Reading it right now.
It's great.
Incredible.
It's so good. It has, like, one of the plot lines
it's
is
so
like
gay, and there are so many dragons, and those are, like, my two favorite things.
It's so gay.
Good.
If somebody says read this book, it's so gay and there are so many dragons, I'm like,
that is honestly what they should put on the little quote on the front of it.
Yeah. So gay. So many dragons.
It's like Hannah's book club pick, right? Instead of the Oprah pick, it's a sticker.
Yes.
And it's so gay. So many dragons.
It has two dragons scissoring, and then it says so gay, so many dragons.
Whoa. Yeah.
Oh, God.
Okay. So.
And then, Marcel, do you have favorite? Are you a fan of dragons?
I am definitely a fan of dragons, but I think that if I had to, if there's a fantasy creature that I identify with, it's definitely the unicorn. And I think this is, partly why Hannah and I are such a good team is because Hannah is team dragon and I'm team unicorn. And, why not?
Yeah, there are two genders.
Said, like, what about you? Are you a fan of dragons? Felt like we were going to bring out a dragon. And are you a fan of dragons? Because we have a little
just very like, here's one I made up. Yeah. And then
I was like preparing for you to have something. And I was like, did you write a thing that I didn't see?
I feel like you being a dragon and a unicorn is a very good.
Yeah, so like book wise, what, the last unicorn
dynamic.
Marcel is too pure for this world, and I am constantly breathing fire on her. Yeah. We bonded early on in our friendship over our shared profound love for the film The Last Unicorn.
Yeah. An incredible film.
It's true. Perfect movie. No notes.
Yeah.
No notes. One note. I don't like the butterfly. Other than that, no notes.
Yeah, that butterfly sucks.
I think it's on HBO. And
I will watch.
Right now. I don't know.
We don't have that.
No idea. Wait, well, did you say we don't have HBO?
Yeah.
In Canada? Yeah. It's not Hulu.
I mean, we have Crave, and you can get HBO through Crave, but we don't have HBO.
Okay.
You get the channel.
Touché.
Oh, apparently you can watch it on YouTube.
Incredible. Okay. Wonderful.
I mean, you can watch it. Amazing. You can watch it right now. Okay, so the opening scene.
When the last
lion roars. Sorry.
It's an incredible movie. And with the exception of this being a very cis normative reading, I do feel very strongly that it is a metaphor for menstruation. Like there's
absolutely.
Like the whole thing about like, becoming a woman and
she has a song about now that she's a woman and then she has to confront the Red Bull.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you've confronted the Red Bull, you're not innocent anymore.
No.
Regret a lot.
Mm. Yeah, you learn how to regret, which is what we all do when we start menstruating.
So, like, I feel like if I could reimagine the movie, I would love to do something that's a little bit, like, less transphobic and a little bit more, like, inclusive and magical. Because if you're talking, if you're using magical creatures as a metaphor, like you can bend all kinds of rules.
Oh, Marcel, don't even get me started.
Let's get you started
on the way on the way that fantasy in general fails to radically reimagine anything. It's like you have these mystical creatures, you invent like a new continent and a new language, but at the end, the man is still in charge. Like, it just makes no sense to me. Like, I've had a couple of people, so in my book, two of my protagonists are two women in a relationship and they have babies. And everyone's like, how can they have babies if they're two women? And I'm like, because they're witches. Like, I don't understand why it's really easy for you to conceptualize the magical power system that I'm putting into place. But when two women have babies, you're like,
they need a boy for that.
It's magic. Yeah. It's magic. Yeah. There are fairies and talking spiders in this book. Like,
this is why Jurassic Park is such an important feminist film. Because it's all of these men being like, we made all of the dinosaurs ladies. They can't reproduce. And the dinosaurs are like, psych.
I'm
sorry. My next book is like, I have signed a contract for it. My next book is a feminist reading of Jurassic Park. So stay tuned.
I'm so excited.
Nature does find a way. Magic finds a way. Couldn't agree with you more, Ella.
God.
Did you know I had a podcast in between our original Witch Please and our reboot of Witch Please. I made a podcast called Secret Feminist Agenda. And
I listened to it.
The title of Secret Feminist Agenda came from an interaction I had once with a man on Facebook where I had posted an article, like one of those like feel good pet story articles that was about two stray mama cats who were raising their litters together and just co-parenting these kittens. But the title of the article was like, you know, two female cats are raising their kittens together. And this man was like, how did two female cats have kittens together? And I was like, three words, secret feminist agenda.
And thus,
surely it's lesbian cat reproduction is what we're all.
It's the future liberals want.
It absolutely is. I've been trying to sneak it into ballots.
Yeah, a write-in vote.
Incredible.
You know who I just want to give a shout out to, like, black science fiction writers, females, because I feel like they are very good.
Yeah, Olivia Butler.
Not doing what the problems we're talking about, where like you know, for years and years, I've been like, no, this is, there's another gender. Like, don't worry about it.
Totally.
This is, I mean, this is.
Octavia Butler does an amazing job of just being like,
here it is.
Hey,
N.K. Jemisin.
Here's some alternatives.
So good at it. Like, this is why.
Yeah, N.K. Jemisin.
We just need straight white cis people to just like take a quick time out from making things.
Just take a nap.
Like, just, nap. Just like give us just a century. To just tell some interesting stories for a bit. And then, I would think about how good superhero movies would be if they weren't all made by straight white cis men.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Think about the stories we could tell if we let literally anybody else tell stories.
I mean, we can even just compare, like, Thor Ragnarok with the Avengers. You know, like... similar actors.
Yeah.
And yet somehow
radically better, more entertaining story.
Yeah. So fun.
Yeah.
So fun.
Totally. Wow.
Haha, we were talking about pets and we made it about getting rid of straight men.
Oh.
It's literally impossible. Well, okay, listen. Speaking of getting rid of straight men, I feel like maybe we should also just quickly talk a little bit about magical creatures in Harry Potter.
I was going to segue back into that.
Because I've been thinking about this.
Yeah.
Ooh. Okay.
Yes. I tell you, it is weird that the Weasleys don't have a cat. Like, I can't.
But they do, don't they?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, so. There is a brief mention in Chamber of Secrets, Ginny loses a jumper. And Mrs. Weasley, she's like, Mom, have you seen my jumper? And Mrs. Weasley says, yes, dear, it's on the cat. But that's like the only time we ever hear mention
of a cat. I don't
think
that makes it into the American release. I think they change cat to couch. I don't think there's a cat. I don't think there's a cat in the North American versions of the books.
I mean, if that isn't, it does make sense because there is no...
Oh, here it is. Okay. I Googled it because we're not the only people that have had this question, apparently.
Of course.
What happens to the Weasley's cat? This is a hook type thing hanging above the fireplace that's shaped like a cat.
So
weird. Which they do have, like, they circle the photo. Wow.
So it's like a cat shaped coat hook or something.
They just call it the cat.
It's on the cat. Wow.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
It is weird, then, that the Weasleys don't have a cat.
They would have far fewer garden gnomes if they had a cat, I'm pretty sure. But, so, I don't know.
Yeah.
100%. I don't know.
It's also just, I mean, we had this conversation at length about the kind of pets that are associated with magic and aren't associated with magic, like cats, rats, bats. I don't know if it's just this.
And snakes.
And, no, that's true, and snakes. But yeah, I feel like...
cats, rats, bats, snacks.
Snacks. I feel like there are certain animals that, because they're so independent, are more associated with magic because they're independent, have this sense of like knowingness.
Yeah.
Whereas dogs, because God bless them, they rely on you so much. So you're kind of like, you're kind of stupid. Like, you wouldn't, you wouldn't survive without me. Whereas a cat could survive on the mean streets of Edmonton and be okay.
Yeah.
You know? But it's definitely weird that the Weasleys don't have a cat.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break and then we'll be back with more nerd stuff.
This week, the greatest discovery becomes Greatest Trek.
That's because Greatest Trek is for way more than just discovery.
We're the hit show on Maximum Fun that covers all the new Star Trek shows. Lower Decks, Strange New Worlds, Picard, Prodigy, Discovery, and any other Star Trek show Paramount throws at us.
Come check it out for our funny and informative recaps of all the new stuff the Star Trek Industrial Complex churns out. It's in your podcatcher every Tuesday.
Subscribe to Greatest Trek. It's a new Star Trek podcast from the makers of The Greatest Generation.
Hey there, it's Annabelle Gurwitch.
And I'm Lara House. We host Tiny Victories, the 15-minute podcast that's about the little things.
Getting into the tiny victory frame of mind is about recognizing minor accomplishments and fleeting joys.
Isn't it a wonderful day when the first password you try actually works? when it's freezing cold outside and toasty as all get out in my shower, my tiny victory is that I turn off the water and get on with my day.
We can't change this big dumb world, but we can celebrate the tiny wins.
So join us on Maximum Fun or wherever you listen to podcasts. Let's get tiny!
I've been thinking lately about the word familiar.
Mm-hmm.
And because I'm very cool, I spent a while reading the Oxford English Dictionary entry for familiar,
nice.
Which unsurprisingly comes from the same root as family and pre, you know, our sort of like 20th century construct of like family is a heterosexual couple and their reproductive children. The family would refer to like the larger household, like everybody you were responsible for. And so they would be much larger and much less sort of biologically based. Mm-hmm. And so like your familiars might just be like people who were like part of your family in a wider sense. So like, you know, like people who also lived in the same household as you. Mm-hmm. And so familiars in the sense of animals are like an animal that is part of your household.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
uh-huh.
Yeah. And so it's, I've been trying to like think about why it is that cats are so often familiars and dogs are not, when dogs seem so much more household based.
Yeah.
But I wonder if like in the period when familiars were first, you know, when like the probably 18th century, when the notion of familiars as accompanying witches came to the forefront, if like dogs mostly lived outside and cats just go wherever the hell they want.
Yeah, I wonder if it's something about also that cats leave and come back. Whereas like dogs are always in the same spot for the most part.
I mean, I was gonna say like dogs used to work for us. Like you would have a working dog, whether that be on a farm or for pest control or hunting or whatever. So that's like, that's not a family member. That's a member of staff.
You pay them. Yeah.
Yeah, you, they're the staff. They're the help. Whereas cats aren't the help. We serve them.
Yeah, cats aren't helping.
This is so far back. I just had like a sudden thought of what if the reason the Weasleys don't have a cat is because, and it's very embarrassing for them that they were like, well, we can't let Peter Pettigrew the rat be a cat. And that they've just been depriving themselves of having a cat
because they had scabbards.
Because it's such a problem when Crookshanks first shows up and Ron is so mad.
Yeah.
Alexis.
Yeah.
Sorry. It's just, I was like, wait,
Alexis, you're so smart.
Wow.
Thanks so much. It's like I'm now mad at him for a number
for
of
multiple reasons.
But like also they could have had a cat if not for you.
Weird old man.
Living in a child's bedroom for 13 years.
Gross.
Yeah, we really act like, oh, the reason you're a bad guy is because you did crime against your friends. But really, it's like also because you've been pretending to be a rat in a child's bedroom for years. That's also a crime.
I will never understand why he was in Gryffindor. Like, I still am looking for the answer to that question.
No. Yeah.
You know?
Mm. Listen, being a rat is brave. It's brave to be a rat.
Maybe it is brave to cut off your finger and be a rat for 13 years.
I've never done that.
I have a thought.
I'm scared.
You know how the sorting hat lets you choose, right? So like if it's important to you, the sorting hat lets you choose.
Yeah.
So imagine little Peter Pettigrew on his first day on the Hogwarts Express, like hangs out with these two bigger kids, James and Sirius, who like look out for him. And Pettigrew comes before Potter, but it doesn't come before Black. So Peter Pettigrew decides he wants to be in the same house.
The house that Sirius is in.
And so Sirius gets into Gryffindor. And so Peter Pettigrew's like, please let me in the Gryffindor, please.
Right. He also pulls a not Slytherin.
Not Slytherin.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, given that from what we can see, the reputation in the wizarding world is that Gryffindors are good guys and everybody else is bad.
Mm-hmm.
And then kids can choose. Why isn't Gryffindor like wildly overpopulated in comparison to the other houses?
But then does the choice, like, is what determines what house you get into based on where that choice is coming from? Because like Harry was in a, I guess Harry was in a position where he could have been Slytherin or Gryffindor depending on what his priorities were. And his priority was like to uphold his parents' mantle of being these people that fight fascism, ostensibly. Yeah. Whereas, like, if he'd chosen Slytherin, it would have been like, but I want the power. I'm the chosen one. Woo. And he chose, and, like, he didn't want that. He didn't choose that. So, like, I suppose even if someone was saying, I want to be in Gryffindor, but if that choice was coming from, like,
wrong place.
A place of either, I guess, some kind of cynicism, maybe you would end up in Ravenclaw.
The other thing is, like, I don't know how familiar you guys are with Rugrats.
Very
profoundly.
Great.
Only the Passover special.
It's really good, actually. But good. I, like, growing up, like, just assumed that everyone like me wanted to be a Tommy and, like, be brave.
Same.
And then one of my best friends was like, oh, I was Team Angelica. And that blew my mind. I was like, wait, as a kid, you would watch this and you were like, I like her, the mean girl. Like, sometimes kids already know. They're like,
yeah.
And also that same friend is proud Slytherin.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the readings that is available for Peter Pettigrew is that he is like, he and Neville are treated as sort of semi-equivalent characters and that Peter had the capacity to turn out to be a Neville and went bad. Peter does ultimately like stand for something. It's just that the thing that he stands for sucks.
Right.
And like, I do think it's kind of important to be like, Gryffindors can also be fascists.
Yeah.
I completely think Gryffindors can be fascists, but like, I don't know. It always seemed to me like Peter Pettigrew stood for himself. Mm. And that doesn't seem like a Gryffindor quality. Because Dumbledore kind of goes quite fashy, has his little fashy phase, doesn't he?
He's a Slytherin.
And he's a Gryffindor.
he's a Slytherin in our mind.
Dumbledore is a Gryffindor because he's always thinking about the greater good, right? And we know that the greater good can go one of two ways in our approach to it.
Maybe Peter Pettigrew was a better man before he was a rat for 13 years.
Because
who knows what being a rat for 13 years does to you.
Yeah, that is also true.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I wonder if maybe Pettigrew was a better man before he spent 7 years relying on people who were more confrontational than him to like fight his battles. Like he never was forced to be, he was never able to be his own person because he spent all of his life being like, you guys do it instead.
Can we talk briefly about Animagi?
Yes.
Yeah. For sure.
Because.
Definitely. That's actually a really fun conversation because me and Alexis tend to ask people, what would your demon be? If you had, you know, in talking about Philip Pullman. And I suppose, like, let's talk about Animagi, but also let's talk about the distinction between, like, Animagi, Patronus, and demons because.
Yeah, also, yeah.
There is a subtle difference.
If you're listening and
you're
like, I don't know what they're talking about right now.
Please. The Animagi is a. For the nerds.
Is like a witch or wizard that can turn into an animal. When we're talking about demon, that's like sort of I don't like this term, but it's connected like to you.
I guess the description of it in the book, which is His Dark Materials by Philip Pullman, is that it's like a physical incarnation of your soul in the form of an animal. And then a Patronus is a spell that you cast to protect you. So it takes the form of an animal that I suppose you associate with protection and, I guess some kind of god. But yeah, talk about Animagi.
Nobody knows.
Nobody knows.
Nobody's ever known. Animagus, Animagi, Animagi.
It should be Animagus, Animagi, but like based on what? I don't know.
Language.
Yeah.
The three Animagi.
Oh.
So what do you think is involved in becoming an Animagus? Like, how does one... Do you choose the animal or does the animal spontaneously emerge from your inner nature?
Right.
Yeah.
Like, what?
To some degree that they choose, right? I think that, don't they say that like Sirius was a big dog,
right? Yeah,
and James was a deer because they could keep the wolf in check, and then they needed a little one to go get the branch
to go through the thing. Like, boop. That's a really good,
you know, to boop the tree. Mm-hmm. Boop.
Yeah, boop. Yeah. We need a
booper.
We need a boop. But then the question I've always had is why, when McGonagall is a cat, are her markings the same as her glasses?
I mean, maybe she chose that. Yeah. Like, if you
I look great the form that in you glasses.
Take, she was like,
I need a square frame on my face.
It's just that my face feels really naked without it. So I'm just going to.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Oh, and Rita Skeeter is I never thought of it.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's because she wants to bug people, right? Like, she wants to go to listen in on the tea.
I think they all choose.
Oh, wow.
That's interesting. Yeah.
So if the three of you were to choose an animal to turn into, what would it be?
Oof.
Bear.
Oh, I love watching bears walk. They're so cute.
I love the way they walk. I mean, like grizzly, for sure. I love a lot of things about them. I really like the idea. I've got a lot of anger and violence in my heart. And I like the idea of under duress being able to just like
murder,
bite somebody's head in half. That seems very satisfying. Yes.
Okay, I guess the other thing to while we're talking about this I want to keep in mind is your is it the same animal that as your demon? You know what I mean?
Ella's, like Ella is shaking her head.
Yeah,
so
I don't think it is.
No,
I think that's why I really paused. Because we talked about that a lot. Like,
it's definitely not because. So if I'm picking an animal, if it's my anime gigagus. If it's my animagina, and I'm picking, I'm turning into a bird because, like, free travel, see the world. I'm not afraid of heights. Like, that's practically smart. Yeah. Like, I'm gonna pick some kind of either really small or really big. Like, I'd either go hummingbird or I'd go like albatross. Like, I do want, I do an extreme.
Wow.
Yeah, I do an extreme.
I think I would want to be somewhere. I think I'd want to be like a finch, like somewhere like small yet
that suits you.
I don't want to be too small because I think the anxiety of being a hummingbird with my heart racing that fast might be a little bit too much. Yeah. So I want to go a little bigger.
I think that's just me anyway. That's maybe why I feel.
Is dinosaur an option? And if not, why not?
100%. Mm. No, dinosaur's definitely an option.
The idea of a Harry Potter style witch turning into like a brontosaurus.
Velociraptor. Yeah.
It probably wouldn't be very discreet, but like
maybe the only.
Yeah, fucking for sneaking.
Okay. So I think the only requirement is that you would need to like learn about the animal inside and out. So you need to know enough about the Velociraptor to truly embody the Velociraptor, right? And so like that's 100%. Probably why we don't see more dinosaur anime.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. No, I completely agree with you.
That makes a lot of sense.
I think that's...
I'm also not against being some sort of flying bug. I know that Rita did that.
Okay. But swatting, I would be nervous. People. Sure, you'd have your brain, so that doesn't make sense.
I wouldn't choose to be a dumb bug.
Yeah, but Alexis, you die in 12 hours. What a terrible plan.
Oh God, I have to turn back into a human
suit. That would keep the same. I would keep the life cycle, but I would be smart.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sure. But then if I was going to be like, if we're talking about my demon then, like my demon is a Bengal cat. Like my cat is my demon. Just, 100%. And then Patronus, it would probably be some kind of horse. Ooh. Like a big wild horse.
Wow.
So I think that's quite like the thought of like, as a protector, a horse like charging someone down or galloping. That seems like an image of... of safety to me. But vastly different.
Yeah.
For sure.
Because there are some then, like, thinking of it as a protection thing. Some people have Patronuses that I'm like, that's not going to save you. What is that, an otter?
No, right? Otter is exactly the one I was thinking. I was like, that's not... Like, otters are cool, but like, if I'm... Be, you know, facing down somebody in an alley with a knife.
Sending
I'm not like
an
if
otter
only
at
there
them.
Was an otter here.
I guess, like, maybe because they're kind of small and like.
And they hold their little pebbles, and that's It's comforting. Yeah. Hey, they're definitely comfort creatures.
They are comfort creatures.
Hmm. Yeah. I mean, my demon is definitely a raccoon.
That's mine.
Hmm? Alexis has said the same.
Same. We're the same. Our souls are the same.
Wow. Wow.
Here are things that are good about them.
They're little hands.
They're little hands. The way they wash food. The way they wash food before they eat it. And then their little hands.
Wait, what? They wash food?
They wash their food. There's an absolutely incredible video of a raccoon washing some cotton candy.
Oh my god, is that why it got it so wet? Sad. I didn't realize it was washing it. I thought it just dropped.
No, it washes it. They wash their food before they eat it. I like how bold they are. Yes. I like I'm a
and
big
they're,
I'm a
they're
big
mischievous
fan.
Without being like criminals. I was gonna
say. Sorry, what kind of animals are criminals? McCavity. Broken every human law, the law of gravity.
Cavity.
No, I guess they're mischievous without being dangerous, which and they are technically, but you know, in terms of like, it's not a
only if they're rabid. Anybody is dangerous if they've got rabies.
That's true.
Yeah, exactly.
It's very true. Exactly. But it's not a grizzly bear where it's like if you get near it, it's going. You should run away. It's a raccoon. Yeah.
There's no point running.
Yeah.
Just accept. Don't.
Yeah.
Delay.
Just lie down. Just lie down and. I didn't welcome your death. Yeah.
When I lived in Montreal, when I was living in the same place that had the cat poop bed incident, there was this family of raccoons that I would always see on the front lawn. It was this like old Victorian house that had been turned into like 12 apartments or whatever. And I remember watching raccoons sucking worms out of the ground, and it is just so funny. They just like, you know, it's like Lady and the Tramp with spaghetti, except that then they go like bing, and it just like,
oh my god, that's so cute. Also, that made me think watching crows anting. Are we familiar with this practice that crows do?
No.
Where they roll, they find like an ant hill and then they roll around on it so that the ants crawl all over them. And they do.
Crows.
Yeah. And it's this thing like the ants release this like formic acid or something that protects the crows from other kinds of like mites. So it's the, so they like ant bathe. You like see crows on the ground sometimes. Anyway, so Patronus would definitely be 12 crows.
Nice.
I like to say my Patronus would be a cluster of aunts. Aunts? Ants. I'm going to say ants.
Aunts. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
No, do you know what?
A swarm of ants. Fabulous.
On a crow is my Patronus.
Yeah, but like a murder of crows.
Mm-hmm. A murder of crows.
It's really good, actually.
I'm pretty sure that, so last night we went, Elliot and I walked to get pizza, and when we were walking home, I'm pretty sure that we walked past a magpie funeral, because there was one recently deceased magpie on the ground under a tree, and then there was another magpie that was chanting, squawking, I don't know, whatever word you use. And then all of these other magpies in the area were like starting to arrive on fences and on tree branches. And they were also like talking back. And as we walked past, once we were sort of out of the way, they all like flew in together and were around the crow. Or sorry, not crow, the magpie.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Corvids are so smart.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-mm-mm. That is incredible. They were saying goodbye.
Very magical. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. I love that. I think that's an excellent spot to start
wrapping
up. Yeah, I think
so.
I don't know if we can
do this all day?
Funeral.
I do, to be honest.
I would love to, but Hannah made it clear that she has D&D later.
Also,
important.
It's visibly like the middle of the night where you are now,
it's
Ella.
It's so
like,
funny
I
to
can't
watch it get
see you anymore.
It's gone so dark.
But I wrote it down. We got to do some plugs. You got to plug us up.
Please.
So we make a podcast called Witch Please, which you can find at witchplease.ca. Because we're Canadian,
Canada,
but also on podcast things. and I also have a book coming out in September called A Sentimental Education, which is about grappling with our relationship with the sentimental stories that formed many of our sort of childhood literary vocabularies, and then what we do as we come to terms with the way in which sentimentality might be rooted in white supremacy. It's a fun book for people who like having fun times. And
I like having fun times. That sounds really fun.
Yeah. And you can pre-order it now from your favorite indie bookseller.
Mm-hmm. Incredible.
And it's on the thing. The big thing. The big one. You know, that one.
Oh, sure.
You can
sure,
get
sure.
it there too.
The not to be named.
You can get it from retailer. Jeff Bezos.
Yeah. The they who must not be named of the internet. Mm-hmm. Right?
Marcel, you want to plug your new podcast?
Yeah. We don't know when it's coming out, so feels premature. So no.
Okay.
But you know what I will do? Okay, so I will tease. I will tease the new podcast. We at Which Please are gradually becoming a global media empire, and so we are also in the process of creating a new podcast, which is about gender-affirming caregiving for the children in your lives. And it is going to be co-hosted by me and longtime friend of the Which Please podcast and even longer time friend of me, Raimi Marks. We don't have a release date for it yet, but we have recorded a pilot. And we got feedback on the pilot, and we're going to record a new pilot, and we're going to release it into the world. And it's going to happen.
And it's going to be called?
And it's going to be called Gender Playground. So you can keep an eye out for it.
Where can people follow you two on social media to find these things also?
Well, if you want to check out my incredible archive of tweets,
yes,
you can find, because I no longer use Twitter, but man, when I did, good. But my social media handle is pretty consistently Cosminator, so Cosmin, like my last name, with a K and then an 8 and then an R. So that's Twitter and Instagram, and probably some of the others like
LinkedIn.
Yes.
academia.edu.
You know, the fun ones.
Yeah. And I am also on Twitter and Instagram and now TikTok.
Ooh.
At
Yay!
I'm on TikTok,
that's
and you
so
know
exciting.
What? It's almost all cat content, so.
Ooh. Yeah.
And I'm HKP McGregor. Great. All of those.
Thank you so much for being on the show. This was so fun.
Oh. Thank
this
you.
Was really nice.
An absolute delight. Yeah.
Thank
my
you.
Eyes back. I have like an ache in my the side of my head.
I could talk to them probably forever. We had to cut it off at some point, but then immediately after that conversation, I was talking to my partner, and we did remember that there's one key thing about Patronuses, and I just have to say it before I forget, but Patronuses can change.
Mm.
Which it doesn't happen very often, but I know obviously Snape's changes to Lily Stagg.
And Tonks changes to Lupin's as well. And I also, Alexis texted me this, and I was like, oh my God, I completely forgot, of course. And then we also remembered, because obviously we were having that conversation about the anime guy, Jai. Mm-hmm.
Shifters.
The shifters. Yeah, the shifters. And, you know, whether or not you can choose your form, mm-hmm. and how we kind of assumed that you could choose your form because all of the forms they pick are practical uses. But then what's really interesting is that we remembered that Lupin's Patronus isn't a werewolf, it's just a wolf.
Yes.
I think that's so interesting.
Yeah, because I just feel like, I don't think he would want to be reminded of the thing that brings him a lot of pain. Why would that bring him, like, the animal
literally,
is like your, what protects you, and like, that wolf does not protect him.
No, and I don't know if it's that, like, the true wolf is some kind of, symbol of something positive, or,
right.
I don't know, the idea that maybe he could, like, reclaim this horrible thing that happened to him, maybe.
Take it back.
You know, but the thing that it makes me think is, if your Patronus can change throughout your life, then sorting children into houses that determine who and who they become and how they become that thing at 11, it just seems a bit ill-advised.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Well, we don't know. I feel like the conclusion to everything.
Because the conclusion is that we could continue to talk about this for days and days and days.
Yes, we have a lot of theories about this made up thing. And thank you for going on that like fantasy journey with us. Especially if you're not normally a fantasy person and you stayed for that. Mm. Incredible, incredible work you've done. We hope you liked it. We had so much fun. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter. We're at Sea Creatures Pod. On Instagram, we're Comfort Creatures Podcast, and email us your pet stories, your guest ideas, whatever you have. We just like connect with us. We are comfortcreatures@maximumfun.org.
And please remember to like and subscribe. It helps other people find the podcast. It keeps you in touch with us, which we love. And tell your friends, guys.
Yeah.
Let's not underestimate the value of word of mouth.
That's huge for us. Mm. Yeah. And also, yeah, tell you can even, if we're your friend, you can also tell us about our own show if you don't have anyone to tell.
I mean, I would love that. Please, by all means, slide into my DMs and tell me about this show. I would love to hear.
I'd love to know. All right. And we'll see you next week.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.